The Critic and the Cynic, the life and work of writer H.L. Mencken, next on Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Join me now for a conversation with Mencken biographer Fred Hobson and with columnist Hal Crowther, last year's winner of the H.L. Mencken Award.
It seems to me that Mencken's world started to fall apart in the late 30s and in the 40s. Then he had his stroke in 1948, didn't die until 1956. Everything had been reading and writing to him. He couldn't write for the last 8 years of his life. I think there is almost a tragedy of the Greek dimensions in certain ways in what finally happened to Mencken.
Well, the world that he worked in, the journalism of his day, he was sort of a Tyrannosaurus Rex. You know, there were all these flamboyant giants who were given a great deal of freedom to be colorful, to rant on at great length. I think if he looked at the world, you know, that we inhabit today, people who practice his profession, he would find it homogenized and truncated and controlled and featureless and depressing in many ways.
Columnist Hal Crowther and biographer Fred Hobson. They'll be back in just a moment to talk about the life and work of H.L. Mencken. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities, with additional funding from the A.J. Fletcher Foundation, the Neutrogena Corporation, the Daniel and Joanna S. Rose Fund Incorporated, and Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. When he died in 1956, Henry Louis Mencken was one of America's last men of letters, widely recognized as a public critic and journalist. But that recognition didn't necessarily place him in the American cultural pantheon. To many critics today, Mencken is a bigot, the purveyor of malicious opinion. His adherents, on the other hand, see him as a champion of free critical expression and wide-ranging aesthetic interests. Listen now for an overview of the man and his work. My guests are the 1992 winner of the H.L. Mencken Award and the author of a new biography of H.L. Mencken. Hal Crowther is a columnist for the Independent Weekly in Durham, North Carolina. Fred Hobson is a professor of English at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. His new book is Mencken, a Biography. For openers, I asked Fred Hobson to reflect on Mencken's current stock in the American literary marketplace.
Well, if stock depends on controversy, the stock is certainly very high. After the publication of his diary in 1989, a great exchange of views on the part of pro and anti-Mencken people in the early 90s. Certainly, he's been in the news far more in the last 3 or 4 years than any time since his death in 1956.
Well, what's the controversy over? What's at stake here?
Anti-Semitism, partly. Largely, in fact. Probably the great debate of the last 3 or 4 years has been over that, although I think he might be guilty of other things in the diary as well, such as being very critical of good friends in Baltimore, his comments on Dreiser, Fitzgerald, Sinclair Lewis, writers of that sort, other things like that.
Well, is this because we should look at H.L. Mencken clear-eyed and say he was a racist or an anti-Semite, or is this the result of an age of political correctness that we live in?
It is in part a result of the age of political correctness. It is also the result of certain things in Mencken himself, that is, his love of language, and the more colorful the better, even if it tended to insult people in the process.
Yeah.
And as has been said before, he was an equal opportunity insulter, certainly.
He believed in malice, didn't he?
He did indeed. And he was really rougher on Southern poor whites than any other group, any other subculture.
Well, now, Hal, I'm going to turn to you. And how do you feel sort of bearing the mantle? You're the recipient of the H.L. Mencken Award last year.
Well, it's a mantle that doesn't fit perfectly, although I really appreciated the prose that the former editors of The Sun used to describe my work with some of the most spectacular hyperbole, I think, that has ever been applied to me. I think what attracted me to Mencken originally as a reader, you know, when I was a young man, was just his incredible ability to destroy someone in a literate way. Uh-huh. You know, to just fire at the target and just leave nothing standing.
Is that what you like to do?
I do, but I think the difference between me and Mencken is that in essence he was a very ambitious man with a real sense of himself and a real sense of it all being a battle out there. Uh-huh. Whereas I think I'm much more theoretical and much more of a reformer, and I sort of use this tool that you know I learned from him and from others. I mean, it's as old as Alexander Pope, but he's the one who made it most popular and most useful in the 20th century, and certainly in popular journalism, no one had ever done anything like that with it before. Yeah. It's just to be literate and still to be absolutely destructive and ruthless is something that he admired and developed. And I think I use it in a much more missionary way. I mean, I think it's very, I don't go after personal enemies and I don't try to attract attention to myself. I hope I can say that without, you know, sounding countervain. But I have this sense of there being the good guys and the bad guys. Uh-huh. And I like to take out the bad guys, and I like to decide who they are.
Let me again turn to Fred Hobson. Mencken has a reputation as one of our world-class cynics. Is that a fair reputation, Fred? And I want to hear you reflect on that and then turn to Hal and ask him about how his journalism works.
I think he was a cynic to an extent, certainly. Mm-hmm. I think the real question is whether cynicism presupposes a base of idealism to begin with. I think that's the true question with Mencken. And I guess he was an idealist in a sense, too. He saw the Baltimore of his youth, the America of the last two decades of the 19th century, as being the nearly perfect time. And anything that departed from that, as things did, certainly in the 20th century, and in particular in the 1930s and 40s, brought out a disillusionment, which certainly was very close to a cynicism on his part.
Well, I saw a piece in the New Republic recently, talking to Hal about this before our taping, that says that cynicism really is getting a bad rap, that cynics actually are very happy people because they have no illusions. Is that you, Hal?
No, I don't think so. As a matter of fact, this is a constant sort of debate that I have with my wife, who writes fiction, and who actually is a person who expects very little of the human race. who has a very dark vision underneath, you know, some of the very amusing things that she writes.
And you do? You expect a lot?
She sees in me, you know, that sort of reformer. I mean, my parents were teachers. You know, I was raised to think that intelligent people have this responsibility to keep the debate going, to keep, you know, fighting away and using logic to root out error. And, you know, to sort of brick by brick build people and onto a higher platform. And, you know, the longer you live, the more futile it seems. But I think a person who's really sort of marinated in that mentality has a real hard time getting out of it. Could I read this one thing I brought
sure.
with me? This friend, you asked me to compare myself to Mencken. A friend sent me this with the idea that this would sort of make me smile and inspire me and so on. And what it really did was show me the difference between the kind of man that he claimed to be. I mean, you know, we can analyze him, but the man he claimed to be and the kind of man I think myself to be. This is Mencken. My one purpose in writing is to provide a kind of catharsis for my own thoughts. It may be a kind of insanity, but it's absolutely free of moral purpose. I am never much interested in the effects of what I write. I live in a vacuum, and I suspect most other writers do too. It's hard to imagine one of the great ones paying any attention to contemporary opinion. Certainly Shakespeare, in the realm of ideas, steered his own course, regardless of what the morons who supported him believed.
Well, Fred,
I don't fully espouse that.
Fred, what does that teach us about, here you've got the recipient of the Mencken Award sitting next to you, what does that teach us about journalism in America? H.L. Mencken wrote that journalists go through periods of soul searching. Do you find that in Hal Crowther's work? Is that a Mencken-esque characteristic?
No, I don't think it is. I think Hal is in an American tradition in certain ways. Mencken really is not. I find Mencken in a certain sort of European tradition, and obviously there's something of Mark Twain in Mencken, his love of language, his love of the crude and the vulgar, and something of Walt Whitman, too, in fact. Mm-hmm. But there's no American journalistic tradition into which Mencken fits, I don't think.
Is he your model, Hal? I mean, how do you think about this guy?
You know, in terms of prose, I think, but you know, I think I don't want to anticipate your question on truth, But I think that whereas I have this sort of nostalgic, sentimental idea that the truth, whatever it might be, is a very important thing to be searching for, I think Mencken was more interested in quality and intelligence and wit. And, you know, the sort of a sense that he saw of, you know, those who carried the culture and those who failed to carry it. Uh-huh. And I think it was almost more an aesthetic than a sense of right and wrong that motivated Mencken.
Well, one of Hal Crowther's recent pieces is about truth with a capital T, a small t, that is to say the desirability, how we locate it in the culture. Did Mencken believe in truth with a capital T, Fred?
Probably not. He would at least say he didn't, of course. He...
That would have made him too vulnerable.
He essentially believed that human life was intrinsically not worth living. It was worth the amusement that came, the good times one found, the active interplay of minds, things of that sort. Uh-huh. But there was no cosmic reason for living.
That's why he would come up with these wonderful lists of places to drink and things to drink. It was... Mm-hmm. He experienced life more than tried to philosophize about it.
Interestingly, though, experiencing life to Mencken was thinking and engaging in thought, in wordplay, uh-huh. in part. That was part of the excitement of life to him.
How would you say that Mencken is playing amongst contemporary writers, Fred? You've just completed a biography of Mencken. Obviously, you paid some attention to the way he's playing amongst our contemporary writers. What about that?
I don't think there's any writer now, truly, and certainly Hal, I think, would say the same, since Hal doesn't see himself precisely in that tradition. For one thing, Hal is at least mildly on the left. Certainly, Mencken was on the right.
I drift a lot.
That's one of the things.
More every year.
Right.
That's what makes it fun to read your columns.
But in any case, I don't think there is any writer with that... in a sense that fleeing from moral responsibility combined with the uh-huh. astounding verbal fireworks that one found in Mencken in the 20s.
How about it, Hal? Do you look around and see Mencken-esque writers?
Well, there's a certain hatred for democracy in Mencken, which is interesting. You know, he came from a middle-class, sort of mercantile-class family. He certainly wasn't upper crust or Ivy League, and yet as soon as he had made his own mark and assumed his own place, he had a tremendous contempt for the mob. And this is extremely unfashionable. I mean, we have now reached the point in our journalism, in many ways, I think, even in our literature, where we're practically, you know, polling the nearest 25 citizens to find out what will play, and nothing would have you know, caught the hard edge of his contempt more than that. More than that. I mean, I myself am becoming less and less of a Democrat as the culture becomes, in my opinion, just more and more watered down and.
Mm-hmm. Should we say, therefore, Fred Hobson, that Mencken was a reflector of his times or a shaper of his times?
He was a shaper of his times very much, I think. I think he had the courage to do things, to say things. His obituary editorial on Bryan in 1925 is one of the classics. I think the assumption was in American culture and Victorian culture in general that people said good things about the dead. Uh-huh. Mencken wrote a scathing column on Bryan.
Now here you're
the day
speaking
after his death.
You're
right.
Speaking of William Jennings,
yes.
Bryan,
right.
Who
yes.
had part of the Scopes trial,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
in Tennessee. Is that mm-hmm. the kind of target that you like to go after, Hal, as an inheritor of Mencken?
Yeah, I think our choices of targets are not dissimilar. You know, hypocrites, people who, you know, who are pompous, who place themselves as the guardians of public morals and public taste and so forth. People who preach from shaky platforms.
But see, I could look at you and say that's what you do. That's what you do. You.
No, I do share that.
In other words, you put yourself in that category.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we all choose our targets according to our times.
I see.
You know, certainly that we were talking before about the politically correct. I mean, this has become everyone's favorite target, but Lord, it is an inviting target. You know, and I think those are exactly the people that Mencken would have, you know, used his best ammunition on.
Uh-huh. Fred, what is the biographer's responsibility here? Again, you've just finished writing a book about Mencken. How do you talk to him, how do you talk about him to readers in the 1990s and stay faithful to the man who died, what, almost 40 years ago?
Mm-hmm. I think any biography is a biography of the times in part, and I think the first responsibility of the biographer is to paint the times, the Baltimore of the 1880s and 90s in particular, to begin with. The other responsibility, I suppose, is to be fair to a man whose politics I don't agree with, really. He hated FDR in the 30s. I'm still a great admirer of FDR in any number of ways. So I think I had my toughest time in the 30s and 40s when I disagreed with him on so many things. Not in the 20s, when I tended to agree with him largely.
What should we make of the concept of the man or the person of letters, as that concept has changed from the time that Mencken was alive to here in the 1990s? Hal?
A lot of that, I think, is it just the change in the number of people who either have or aspire to having a true liberal education. You know, people who, it used to be, this is one of my favorite lines, I've used this before, but it used to be, you know, people would labor on Wall Street for, you know, for all their lives so that their sons could go to Harvard and be gentlemen, you know, and be scientists and writers and so on. Now, of course, you try to get into Harvard so you can go to Wall Street and make the money. It's a completely different, the idea of culture, really, it's just sort of bought and sold now. And I think, you know, that it's changed very much from the day when a man like Mencken, who at least thought of himself as the representative of high culture, could be an amazing player in the national game. I mean, everyone knew what he thought, and people discussed him and so on. Is there anyone even remotely like this today? I mean, people discuss Rush Limbaugh, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I mean, the sense that a man of letters can have an enormous influence on popular culture, I think that's behind us.
Is that a reflection, really, of the rising or falling stock, mental cultural stock of the American people, or is it a reflection of the way the information gets delivered? I mean, we live in an age which is infinitely more sophisticated from the standpoint of getting information to people. How about that?
We have an enormous flow of information, but I think we have a very poor system for choosing, you know, what information is worthwhile and what isn't. I think, of course, the volume itself generates that. You know, how do you choose? I mean, we have these people like Christopher Whittle trying to plug these children in his new schools into these enormous consoles with tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment, but no one to say, choose this, go here, pick here. The teacher's never in the room. It's a terrifying thing. What has the volume got to do with it, finally? You know, if the retrieval isn't done according to some kind of master intelligence, you know, some sort of guiding force.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about H.L. Mencken. Fred Hobson, you're a biographer of H.L. Mencken. Hal Crowther, you received the H.L. Mencken Award last year. Fred, what would Mencken make of literary history and literature as we find it in the 1990s, set against the way he thought of things like that?
Well, Mencken would be against postmodernism. He was even against modernism to a great extent in the 20s and 30s. He was a Victorian, essentially. He, as a literary critic, certainly had outlived his time by the 20s and 30s, or certainly by the 1930s. Somebody mentioned Joyce to him in a letter in the late 30s, and he hadn't read Joyce, or not since the early short stories of Joyce. Mencken would think the attention on style, form, metafiction, the narrative's agonizing role in the telling of the story, all of this stuff he would think is rather incidental, secondary to the point of the story. He did have a very practical approach to fiction as to any number of other things.
What would he say about biography itself? I mean, that is in many ways, that is a concept or a practice that in the 1990s is under attack. There is no such thing as a self for a biographer to write about. Here you've just finished spending a lot of time writing a biography of Mencken. What about it?
Well, in his own case, he would be very much for it. He certainly feared being misunderstood, but he feared being forgotten even more. Mm-hmm. In fact, his great fear was that he would be forgotten, which is why he staged, I think, the release of his manuscripts 15, 25, and 35 years after his death.
Was he protecting people, or was that a vanity at work?
It is protecting people, largely, and certainly that was his, given reason at the time. I think it was also, though, to keep himself in the public light. I mean, he for a man who didn't believe in immortality of any other sort, that was a form of immortality.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think that, Fred is in a position where, you know, he's judging a man's whole life, and in the case of someone like Mencken, there are enormous contradictions. And you spoke of you know, his kind of breaking the taboo on speaking ill of the dead. But on the other hand, the main reason that he broke with Dreiser, I don't know if you saw that in Yardley's book there, but Dreiser came to his house the day before Mencken's mother died and never asked about her health or showed any regard whatsoever and left without, you know, saying, I hope your mother is better in the morning. And he never really spoke to him again, never forgave him. And also his literary taste, you know, I mean, it's dreadful in some cases. On the other hand, you know, he saw that there was something in Fitzgerald through all the rubbish that Fitzgerald published, which he always recognized as rubbish. I mean, he goes through, you know, well, this story is nonsense, side by side with this story, which is genius, and so on. I mean, in some forms, he was really acute. Others, he was absolutely tone deaf. And, you know, how do you take a man's whole life and make a judgment, which is one of the real difficult.
It sounds like you could be making the distinction between literature or literary history on an utterly personal level, if not idiosyncratic, and literature or literary history as a kind of a cultural enterprise, the way it plays between a kind of tension between the two. Am I on the right track here, Fred?
Yeah, I think so, and it also leads me to think a couple of things about Mencken as writer and his role in literature in the 20th century. He certainly saw himself as a journalist, first of all, and Americans in the 20th century haven't placed their greatest journalist in the canon, unlike England in the 18th century. Certainly Addison, Steele, Dr. Johnson were all journalists, essentially. Edmund Wilson and Mencken in the 20th century, though, somehow don't fit. They didn't write fiction. They didn't write poetry or drama. Certainly that's changing to an extent, I think, but Mencken is ruled out of the canon because he was a journalist, and certainly the word journalist has a pejorative tone in America for the most part.
Well, that's a kind of a paradox, isn't it? I mean, because, we include now in the canon virtually anything as a candidate for the canon. Because one is a journalist, we don't necessarily exclude him, and yet he's on the margins.
I think he still is, for other reasons too, though, other than being a journalist, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's true. It's funny, as a journalist, I'm of two minds about that. At one time, I think that journalists didn't get their due. You know, I mean, I just, having known a lot of journalists and also knowing a lot of people who write, quote, you know, serious literature, fiction and so forth, I happen to know that a great many of the journalists have been much more literate and, you know, people with a lot more dimension, you know, as writers in certain ways than many of the people who've been given a lot more acclaim. On the other hand, journalism in this country is in terrible trouble. I mean, this is one of my favorite topics, but I mean, both the electronic revolution, you know, you've all followed the NBC debacle and so on, but it's just basically it's become such a dollar and cents thing. I mean, all the journalists now are basically working for enormous conglomerates who are not interested truly in journalism, with very few exceptions. And I think that journalists will, if they don't have enough respect today, I think they'll have a lot less respect in 10 or 15 years.
It's become part of the entertainment industry.
Yeah, which is a terrible shame. There should be some way, I mean, once again, I sound like a reformer, there should be some way for people to appreciate the importance of serious journalism and protect it from the pressures of the marketplace. But I don't know how that could be done, or, you know, I wouldn't have a plan.
Let's move toward a conclusion of our conversation. Fred Hobson, Hal Crowther, let me become whimsical for a moment. If Mencken were here at a fourth microphone, what would you say to him? What would you ask him about? Is there a particular point of curiosity that you have? Fred, again, you've spent a lot of time learning about this man's life and writing about it. Anything come to mind immediately?
I guess I think I know at least how he would respond to the 1990s. In a certain way, I'm not sure I can think of anything to ask him in particular, but I certainly would be very much aware of his response to people like Dan Quayle, first of all, and to the way the election was run in 1992, the talk show Politics of America. He would see it all as a great a circus, just as he did, obviously, in the 1920s. I think you would find it even more ludicrous in a certain way, because these are people now who use good English and in every possible way seem to be rather intelligent people. And for that reason, all the more, I think you would find the 1990s an incredibly fascinating era.
Hal, I'll give you the last word.
He would have just loved the 80s, as I did, you know, where there are these great inflated creatures floating around on the national stage without a clue, without a clue. I mean, he would have risen from the grave if he could have, just to have at them, you know. And it was it was just a privilege, really, to be a journalist during the 80s. But I wish I could believe that we're going to have a wonderful renaissance. I'm holding back a little bit of optimism.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you for your contribution to Soundings. Fred Hobson, you're a professor of English at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And in the fall of 1993, or thereabouts,
correct,
we can look forward to your biography of H.L. Mencken. Does it have a title yet? And what are you going to...
Just Mencken, colon, a biography.
All right, fair enough. Congratulations on that book. And Hal Crowther, columnist for The Independent in Durham, North Carolina. Hal is the recipient of the H.L. Mencken Award in 1992. Have I got that right?
Right.
All right. Well, it's good to see both you guys out here at the Humanities Center. Thanks for coming to talk on Soundings.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
This is Soundings, a magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. In just a moment, I'll tell you where to write if you'd like a cassette tape of this week's show. You've been listening to a conversation about the American editor and critic, H.L. Mencken. My guests were Hal Crowther and Fred Hobson. Hal Crowther won the 1992 H.L. Mencken Award, given by the Baltimore Sun. Fred Hobson teaches at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. His biography of H.L. Mencken will be published next fall. Send $5 for a cassette tape of this program or $2 for a Soundings catalog. Write to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. Please ask for program number 659. That's program number 659, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, the zip code 27709. Next week, the American writer Ernest Hemingway in Fact and Fiction. Novelist William McCraner Henderson will be here to talk about his new book, I Killed Hemingway. Literary biographer Michael Reynolds will also be on hand to talk about his new book, entitled Hemingway, The American Homecoming. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities, with additional funding from the A.J. Fletcher Foundation, the Neutrogena Corporation, the Daniel and Joanna S. Rose Fund Incorporated, and Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. Thanks for listening to Soundings. Our theme music is by Jeff Perry. Until next week, at this time on this radio station, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. The Critic and the Cynic, The Life and Work of Editor and Journalist H.L. Mencken, this week on Soundings. I'm Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Join me for a conversation with the 1992 winner of the H.L. Mencken Award given by the Baltimore Sun. You'll also hear from the author of a new biography of H.L. Mencken. My guests will be columnist Hal Crowther and Fred Hobson of UNC Chapel Hill. The Critic and the Cynic, The Life and Work of H.L. Mencken. Some answers and insights from the National Humanities Center this week on Soundings.